Hello and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only and therefore best soccer talk show. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Taylor.
And this week on the show,
America's most successful soccer radio program is off the air. We'll give you the who, what, where, when and why.
The Richmond Kickers will play in a championship game this Saturday. We'll preview the game with head coach Lee Cowlishaw.
If you're tired of Michael Vick and all the bad boys in the NFL, then we'll give you our top five good guys of soccer.
And I'll try to break Taylor's winning streak in our increasingly competitive spelling bee. This week we'll be spelling Italian players. But before we begin, Taylor, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
So how was Turkey?
It was great. Yeah, you know, the girlfriend and I did all the sightseeing and everything like that. But most importantly, I got her to emotionally react when Harry Kewell scored for Galatasaray. And to me, that's the best thing you can do on vacation. So there you go. But on the flip side, it seems like my week away caused me to miss quite a few things.
Yeah, you missed the big kickoff in the Premier League. I know Manchester United won their first game, but I believe they lost the second one to Burnley.
Yeah, basically it was like a 16-hour flight home. The people at Heathrow were quite liberal with their searching of my person. So I got home very late on Saturday night, and I checked the scores and was elated to see that we'd beaten Birmingham. And then I was certain I'd seen something wrong when it said we lost to Burnley. That was not what I had expected, nor what I had hoped for, but... they rebounded this weekend, 5-0 at Wigan. I was pretty happy about that. How have your Wolves been?
Well, the Premier League kicked off with Wolves in it, so that's a success to start with.
Right on.
We lost two games, but we did win one against Wigan. Mm-hmm. We beat Wigan 1-0. The big thing for me is that Wigan, on their opening day, they beat Aston Villa 2-0. Mm-hmm. So we beat Wigan 1-0.
I'm really interested to hear where this goes.
Okay, and so by the transitive property,
okay,
that means Wolverhampton would beat our local rivals Aston Villa 3-0. Because that's how football works.
So, by this twisted logic, I assume that somehow you're going to finish in the top four, if not win the league?
Oh, at least.
Oh, lovely.
Or maybe not. Right now, I'd settle just for avoiding relegation, which I think we're just below mid-table, so we'd take that.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that the transitive property is going to help you there. But closer to home, another big story that I missed was World Soccer Daily coming to an end, which is a topic that I believe we're going to discuss after the music fades up and then fades back down. You battle back in.
Last Friday, the biggest soccer show in America went off the air.
Yeah, World Soccer Daily had been on for 7 years. It was hosted by Stephen Cohen and was a daily 2-hour radio show focusing on all things football.
And the interesting thing is how and why the show went off the air.
Right.
Basically, in April 2009, which was the 20th anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster, which is when 96 Liverpool fans were crushed to death at the Hillsborough Stadium in England.
Right.
Stephen Cohen claimed that the reason for those 96 deaths were 6,000 to 8,000 Liverpool fans showing up without tickets.
Yeah, so essentially he blamed those 96 deaths on the fans themselves and not really on anybody else.
And that's a direct contradiction of what's known as the Interim Taylor Report,
right,
which basically blamed the police for poor crowd control.
Yeah, so Liverpool fans were understandably upset by this. They immediately called for Cohen to apologize. Cohen sort of dug his heels in, and then the fans called for his sponsors to boycott the program, which probably wouldn't work for most sports, but for soccer in this country, it sort of did.
Yeah, because it's still a relatively small market, so a boycott is more effective.
Right. So Cohen began to feel the pressure, and about a week later, he issued an apology. The Liverpool fans didn't feel like it was sincere enough, and so they continued on with the boycott, and the situation escalated and escalated and escalated.
Yeah, to the point where Stephen Cohen was receiving death threats. It's not clear whether those death threats are actually from the Liverpool supporters who were involved in the boycott,
right,
or just from Liverpool supporters who were enraged by his comments.
Right. So on Friday, August the 21st, Cohen officially ended World Soccer Daily, citing that he didn't want to bring any more harassment on himself or his family. So for Cohen, the issue all along was freedom of speech. You know, his show is based in the United States, the country that values freedom of speech, you know, more than anything else. So I guess his feeling was that, you know, he was saying what he wanted to say and he was, you know, well within his rights to say it.
Okay, but my understanding of freedom of speech is it's the freedom to say what you want. It doesn't guarantee that people won't disagree with you.
Right.
Right? So freedom of speech guarantees that the government won't take action against you for what you say.
Right.
It doesn't guarantee that Liverpool supporters won't disagree with you.
Right, and I would say that Liverpool supporters, you know, were exercising their freedom of speech by trying to organize this boycott. But I think the situation was muddled a little bit when you introduced the death threat issue. Right. Because then for Cohen, it's not just a simple boycott. It's not just people opposing his show. It's people attacking him and attacking his family. And at that point, you know, he's not going to be able to just let it go.
Yeah, and I can understand why he was so upset by that. I mean, it's obviously wrong for him to be receiving death threats. But I think maybe there is a need to separate the idea of the boycott and the protest against what he said.
From the wingnuts who sent him death threats?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think he put the two issues together and like assumed that it was the same people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he had evidence that it was the same people or if he didn't. But once he puts those two together and talks about them in that way, it makes it impossible for there to be any sort of mediation because it's elevated the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that there's, in what you're saying, there's also like a secondary issue, which is just kind of Cohen's responsibility as the host of this very widely listened to, very popular radio show.
Yeah, I think the problem for me is that when you're the host of a very popular radio show, it's probably you could argue it's the primary source of information for soccer fans in America.
Right.
Definitely on the radio, possibly overall. When you've got that sort of authority, you've got a responsibility to make sure that what you're saying is accurate.
But I also think, and you're probably going to laugh, but I think that his accent plays a part. I think that if he were an American discussing soccer, he might not have the credibility he does. But, you know, people tune in, they hear an English accent, and they think, oh, well, he was born with it, he was raised with it, it's in his blood, so he must know what he's talking about.
And clearly that's not the case, because if anything, I'm living proof that just because you're English doesn't mean that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
The other thing about him being English is that he's broadcasting to a primarily American audience who won't be as familiar with the details of the Hillsborough disaster as an English audience would be. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's worth us sort of summarising what the Interim Taylor Report said about the Hillsborough disaster.
Well, basically, on April 15th, 1989, there was a semi-final match of the FA Cup being played. It was between Liverpool and Nottingham Forest, and it was being played at a neutral ground, which was Sheffield Wednesday Stadium, Hillsborough. So 15,000 Liverpool fans are attending the game. About a third of them show up 15 minutes before kickoff, as instructed. Because of this poor planning, the turnstiles are completely overloaded, so the police and the security personnel open a gate, allowing all these fans to just stream in. So there's basically three corridors that they can go down. There's one to the left and one to the right, and then there's one straight down the middle, and, you know, from their vantage point, you can actually see the pitch. The signage there is, you know, later deemed to be totally inadequate, so that all the fans pretty much just head down the central corridor and into the two central holding pens. Do you want to explain what a holding pen is?
Well, yeah, basically, if you look at English stadia now, it's all-seater. But back in 1989, it wasn't. It was terraces,
right?
Which basically means it was all standing.
Right.
And those standing areas were divided into pens by barriers.
Right. So all of these fans are now flowing down this one corridor into the pens, and it's a case where the people in the back don't know what's happening to the people in the front who are being crushed. And so, in the end, 96 Liverpool fans lost their lives.
Yeah, and the Interim Taylor Report explicitly stated that there was no significant drunkenness, there were no significant number of ticketless fans, and there was no significant violence in the pens.
Right.
So you can understand why Liverpool fans are upset if someone suggests otherwise.
Yeah, or explicitly states that 6,000 to 8,000 Liverpool fans were the direct cause of Hillsborough.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, once Cohen said that, he's that type of radio host. He's like a Jim Rome, Howard Stern type that's not used to being challenged. Mm-hmm. And so when there was a reaction against what he said, that's sort of alien to him, and I don't think he knew how to respond.
Yeah, to me, basically, it's like he said, 2 plus 2 equals 5, and that's just how it is. And any mathematician is going to tell you that that's not the case, and the Taylor Report is going to tell you that, you know, what he said isn't true. And so it went back to Stephen Cohen saying, well, it's freedom of speech, it's my opinion, I can say what I want. But to me, there's a difference between stating a contrarian opinion, which I would say is freedom of speech, and stating a contrarian opinion as fact. And that, to me, is an abuse of free speech.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, I think. But regardless of how you feel about Cohen or his comments, the result of all this is that American soccer fans no longer have a daily radio show.
Yeah, I saw a poll on theoffside.com which basically asked, would you miss the show? And 85% of people said they would, which really surprised me until I read the comments section, which was pretty much like, I won't miss Cohen, but I'll miss having that show here because of what it meant. It meant that many people cared about soccer that it needed a daily program to discuss it.
And so that suggests that it's not just a simple black and white pro-Cohen or anti-Cohen issue.
Right. But I think that that's been the problem all along, is that basically it's like, to either side, if you support Stephen Cohen and your free speech, then you're against the people, you know, the 96 who died. And vice versa, if you're pro-Liverpool, then you're against Stephen Cohen and you're against freedom of speech. And there's no way to be in the middle of that. And that automatically means that there's never going to be any gray area and there's never going to be any room for compromise.
And it's a shame that the debate went that way and that Stephen Cohen and the Liverpool fans couldn't find some sort of middle ground. Because at the end of the day now, Stephen Cohen is out of a job and American soccer fans are without a daily radio show.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Taylor
and Daryl
here on WRAR 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
This Saturday, August 29th, the Richmond Kickers play the Charlotte Eagles in the USL 2 Championship game. Taylor called up Kickers head coach Lee Cowlishaw to get his thoughts prior to the match.
Lee, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
Not too bad. I'm getting pretty excited about this weekend. I'm sure you're doing the same. Or what's it like for you in the build-up to a championship game?
I mean, it's pretty much the same. You know, we're playing at home. Mm-hmm. We'll train tomorrow and Friday at the stadium field, which we normally do. The only real difference in the build-up will be two things. One, we'll have kind of an awards banquet on the Friday, which will kind of take up the whole afternoon where both teams come in. There'll be the awards for the whole league, a few speeches, meal, on pat features on the back, and, you know, you move on. Also, the other difference is we're kicking off at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be on the Fox Soccer Channel. I think Tate Delay is going to be on there on 11 o'clock on Saturday night.
Yeah. And speaking of your honor ceremony, you had, what, five players named to the All-Star team this week?
Let me see. We had Red Deli up front. Mm-hmm. I think scored 13 goals so far. Ronnie was the goalkeeper of the year. Yombi William was our central defender. Cameroon, he was taken. And Michael Burke was the fourth. And I believe Sasha Gores, our left back, was on the second team. So five total, yeah.
Not too bad. And I assume that those five are going to play a pretty big role on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, those five are the ones that get all the attention with the stats. Ronnie, the goalkeeper, Burke, the assist, Kelly, obviously scoring the goals. But obviously there's seven or eight other players who are going to make a big part in the game.
And are there any players on the Charlotte Eagles that you're concerned about?
Yeah, they've scored the most goals in the league, I believe. They're very dangerous going forward. They've got four or five, I would say, game-winner type of players.
Mm-hmm.
The one I know the most is Justin Swinart, who we had on loan for 2 years, a few years back. He helped us to the USL 1 final in Seattle back in, I believe, 2005. He actually retired from his last game ever, so unfortunately we've got to make sure it's not a happy ending for him.
Yeah, let's hope so.
The good thing about Charlotte and Richmond, actually just looking at just doing a little bit of research today, just to see, I mean, I thought we were doing quite well making it's going to be our fourth final in 5 years. But what I didn't realize is it's going to be Charlotte's fourth final in 5 years as well. So yeah, we know each other pretty well. They've got a lot of experienced players. So do we. They're used to winning, and so are we. So
yeah. The stat that I read today was that you guys haven't won it since, what, 06? But the last time you did win it, you actually beat Charlotte in the final. So
that's right.
That's got to be a bit comforting.
Not really.
Fair enough.
90 minutes on Saturday.
Yeah, I suppose so. Now, you said Charlotte had some pretty potent goal scorers, but do they have anybody that can score in the 120th minute? Because I know you all have that.
Well, that was good. That was a good test for us. Harrisburg played a fantastic game, and they tested us the whole way, and we missed some golden opportunities to maybe make it a little easier for ourselves. But to keep going and to stay physically strong and mentally tough, and certainly a storybook ending to put the ball in the back of the net with 120th minute. You feel pretty confident you can win from that position.
How was the crowd for that match?
That was a good crowd. You know, it was very, very vocal. That was a positive thing. I think we had close to 2,000 fans. And the big thing for us is they were very, very loud.
Are you expecting a similar turnout this weekend?
I know we've pre-sold over 500 tickets already.
Wow.
You know, I'm hoping that we'll be a well over 2,000, pushing closer to 3,000. You know, that would be a very good attendance for us.
And if our listeners want to attend the game, what exactly can they do to get tickets?
The way to do it, just go straight to richmondkickers.com. You can order your tickets online right there, and they'll leave the tickets for you. We'll call. If you want to be way to the last minute, just show up, and you can buy your tickets right at the stadium. Everything from now on is going to be $15.
All right. And you care to venture any kind of prediction as to what might happen?
I can tell you it's going to be an extremely wide-open attacking match. Charlotte play 4-3-3. They will attack, obviously, when they're losing, and they're going to attack when they're winning as well. Mm. So it makes for a very attractive match. I expect it to be a lot of chances, if not a lot of goals. But I would think it will be certainly one that people would want to watch.
Lee, best of luck to you and the team this weekend. Hopefully we get to see you celebrating at midfield at the end of it.
So that was Taylor talking to Kickers head coach Lee Cowlishaw. Just a reminder that the USL 2 Championship game, Richmond Kickers versus Charlotte Eagles, is this Saturday, August 29th, 8 o'clock kickoff at the University of Richmond Stadium. For more information, go to richmondkickers.com.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Taylor
and Daryl
here on WRAR 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
So the week before last, Taylor and myself did our top 5 players to watch in this upcoming season. And we asked listeners to email us at soccer@wrar.org with their players to watch.
Right. So we got one from Luke from Philly. He said he's interested to see how David Beckham does this season. He says it's always an exciting story to follow. Mainly it's driven by the media. But with 100-plus caps and him being a legend, what will he decide to do after the MLS season? We all know he wants to play in South Africa, but can he perform at the highest level?
I think the answer is we'll see him go back to Milan in January.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about that.
We got one from Joe from Dundee in Scotland. He was excited to see Diego play for Juventus. He says, I think Juve is the only team to challenge Inter, and Diego is a very creative player to watch, especially now that he's teamed up with a childhood favourite in Del Piero.
See, they're stealing my ideas, Daryl. You laughed at Diego, but here we are. All right, Daniel from Louisville is excited to see Rafa Benitez. Not a player I know, but now that Liverpool is struggling, he might set the record for most Rafa rants about insert pitiful excuse for loss press conferences ever.
That should be exciting to watch.
Yeah, and I'm going to say the record's going to be broken at 4 games.
We also have one from Michael from St. Louis. Like me, he was excited to see Cristiano Ronaldo, like me, he was excited to see him fail. Michael says, I hope he and his friend Carlos Tevez find not winning any trophies a great deal of fun.
Well, another player who better get used to not winning any trophies would be Jozy Altidore. As Kevin from Nashville, Tennessee put, a far more talented soccer player than myself, I'm excited to see how he does in the most physical league in the world. He's playing for Hull, by the way. He's built for it, and the man shout has the speed and strength to deal with Premiership defenders. It'll be good to see him mature in the game and play with more tools than just his speed.
Another American player, Landon Donovan, didn't make Josh from Richmond, Virginia's list, but he got an honourable mention. And he was excited to see Donovan if and only if the Livorno deal goes through after the MLS season. So basically, he's excited to see Donovan play in Europe.
Yeah, play somewhere besides Germany, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. 0-3 there, hopefully 1-1 in Italy.
So that was listener feedback to our previous top five, which now means it's time for a new top five.
All right.
This week, Taylor and myself are going to list our top five good guys.
Mm-hmm.
This is players who've done something
good.
All right, so Taylor, you want to start us off?
So my number five would be Manchester United's Ryan Giggs. He's never been red carded whilst wearing a Manchester United jersey, so that's a 20-year career and 808 appearances with no red cards.
Isn't it pretty easy not to get a red card if you don't tackle anyone?
He's tackled before. He's also a UNICEF representative, and he's even an officer in the Order of the British Empire.
Oh, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So my number five is Ecuadorian fullback Ulises de la Cruz. He played for Aston Villa a few years back, and while he was in the Premier League, he gave 20% of every paycheck to Ecuadorian charities.
So my number four is Mr. George Weah. On the pitch, he was the African and World Player of the Year. He also won a FIFA Fair Play Award. Off the pitch, he was a UN Goodwill Ambassador. He worked for peace in his war-torn nation of Liberia. And he even ran for president of Liberia, albeit unsuccessfully. But he was really widely supported, mainly because he'd already given back so much to the country, and because he was already so wealthy, people figured he couldn't be corrupted.
My number four is Athletic Bilbao's Joseba Echeverria, which I've possibly pronounced incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. You did good. Sounded nice.
He's a Basque player who plays for Athletic Bilbao. So committed to the club that in this year, this season, he's playing for free.
I guess I'll sort of continue the trend of players playing for free, because my number four is Pele. It's a pretty obvious choice. He gave up a fair amount of his salary to children's organizations in Brazil. He helped grow the game in the United States considerably. When he played for New York, youth players registered jumped from 100,000 to 400,000. Not giving him complete credit for that. But I think most importantly, he said in a New York Times interview, "It seems that God brought me to Earth with a mission to unite people, never to separate them." And I'd say he did that rather well.
My number three is Gary Lineker, former England striker, who he goes one better than the Ryan Giggs record of never being red carded. Mm-hmm. Gary Lineker was never red carded and never yellow carded.
All right. So basically it's okay that Gary Lineker never tackled, but it's not that Ryan Giggs didn't?
Basically, Gary Lineker is now a TV presenter, and he deliberately thought he was sort of looking after his intellect while he played by deliberately not heading the ball.
So my number two is a bit of a cheat because it's actually the entire club of Barcelona. Whereas some clubs utilize the front of their jersey for ad sales, my beloved Manchester United will get about 20 million a year from Aon for theirs. Barcelona actually pay the UNICEF Children's Fund about $2 million a year to sport the UNICEF name on their chest.
My number two was George Weah, who we've already covered.
Then I guess we'll move on to my number one, which is Mehdi Madavikia. Madavikia, which I'm probably mispronouncing, definitely isn't a very common name in the world football community, but he's currently a pretty important one. He was the longtime captain of the Iranian national team. I say was because during a recent World Cup qualifier against South Korea, he and three other national team players wore green armbands to show solidarity with their compatriots protesting the Iranian elections. Well, at halftime, they were instructed to remove them, but Madavikia kept his green captain's armband on for the duration of the game. Subsequently, the four teammates were permanently retired from international football. So that's a pretty bold move in this day and age, where the captain's armband doesn't quite mean what it used to. Clearly, to the Iranian national team, it does.
My number one isn't someone you'd obviously think of as a nice guy. It's Paolo Di Canio. He's probably most famous for
those
doing...
of you who can't see, I'm just staring blankly at Daryl right now.
So Di Canio is probably most famous for being pictured doing a fascist salute, which definitely does not make him a good guy. But he won the FIFA Fair Play Award in 2001 because he was playing for West Ham against Everton. Everton keeper Paul Gerrard came out of the box to try and take the ball, injured his knee, went down injured. The ball was crossed. Di Canio was presented with a very easy opportunity to score. And rather than taking advantage, he caught the ball and stopped play himself.
So he was just a very noble fascist. So I'm sure that some of those you may not have agreed with, some of them you may have agreed with. So for those of you who have your own top five good guys, please feel free to send it to us at soccer@wrar.org.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor
on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
Each week on the show, Daryl and I will be challenging each other to a spelling bee. This week we'll be doing Italian players. Last week we did German players, and I took a 1-0 lead. So I guess this week Daryl will be hoping to even the score.
Okay. I'd like you to spell for me Udinese midfielder Gaetano D'Agostino.
Can you repeat that first name?
Of course. Gaetano.
Can you use it in a sentence?
The Udinese midfielder Gaetano D'Agostino is a very good passer.
I'm going to assume it's a proper noun, so I'm going to go with Gaetano. G-I-A?
Keep going.
T-I-N-O?
Afraid not.
And afraid not. There it is. All right. Well, how do you spell it?
It's G-A-E-T-A-N-O. I'll give you a free shot at D'Agostino.
And then D'Agostino is what? D apostrophe A G O S T I N O?
It is. But still incorrect.
That's not... All right. Well, hopefully I can punish you equally. Okay. So I would like for you to spell AC Milan forward David De Janeiro.
Okay. I'm going to say David is D-A-V-I-D. Could you repeat the surname for me, please?
De Janeiro.
De Janeiro.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go D-I-G-A-N-E-R-O.
Wrong all over the board. Oh. First of all, it was David, so it was D-A-V-I-D-E.
Okay.
D-I-G-E-N-N-A-R-O. And there's silence on the other end. Daryl and I are now combined 1-for-6 for spelling. We got a.
I guess the important stat is that you lead 1-0.
Yeah, I suppose so. All right, well, tune in next week where hopefully we'll spell better than 6-year-olds. That about wraps it up for us here on the Total Football Soccer Show. But before we go, it's worth mentioning that next week, Daryl will be on vacation. I guess he's paying me back for being gone for an entire week.
Yep, it's my turn.
Yeah, there you go. So, Daryl, before you leave, you have any words of wisdom that you can pass on?
Well, as American businessman Franklin P. Jones once said, one advantage of talking to yourself is that you know at least somebody's listening.